Hi, and welcome to the Friday Coffee Meetup podcast for Friday, May 8th, 2020. On today's episode, we'll hear from Paul Orlando, an adjunct professor of entrepreneurship at the University of Southern California, on this week's virtual meetup, Growth in a Downturn. The Friday Coffee Meetup podcast is brought to you by Echo Factory, a Pasadena-based marketing and advertising agency that specializes helping healthcare, consumer goods, clean tech, and aerospace companies achieve rapid sustainable growth. Echo Factory CEO Mike Schaefer is a co-founder and organizer of Friday Coffee Meetup. If you're interested in how Echo Factory can help your company achieve rapid sustainable growth, you can learn more at echo-factory.com. Every week, the Friday Coffee Meetup brings together innovators, startups, investors, tech companies, and entrepreneurs at the cross-campus co-working space in Pasadena. You can learn more about upcoming meetups and how you can attend in person at FridayCoffeeMeetup.com. Morning, everybody. Now, here's Paul with this week's presentation.
I am so excited to introduce to us again. He's spoken for us before. We're really grateful to have him back. Paul Orlando, he's an innovator in the Pasadena community. He has worked in accelerators on three different continents. Last time he talked to us about working in the Vatican, I think it was, the accelerator in the Vatican, so that was really cool. Check out his recording and video, which are on our podcast and our video channel, which are also in the chat. He is an adjunct professor of entrepreneurship at USC, where he also runs USC's startup incubator, and that's for students, alumni, and faculty. He advises Fortune 500 companies on innovation, how to get growth and experimentation into their cultures. He has also written a book, really cool. It's called Startup Sash Village for the Underdog Entrepreneur. I have put the link for that book into the chat window as well. It's to help startups and the tech community who might fall outside of mainstream hubs. With that, I'm really pleased to introduce Paul Orlando, who's going to talk to us today about growth in a downturn. With that, I'm going to stop sharing and turn it over to Paul. Welcome, Paul.
Hey, thank you. Thanks, Christy. And thanks to Innovate Pasadena and to Mike, Doreen, Chuck, Wayne, Michael, Andy, John, so a lot of people online. I'm missing some names, I know. But great to be back, and I'm going to share my screen here. Okay. And like Christy said, So as Christy said, I've spoken, I think I may have spoken 7 or 8 times with Innovate Pasadena, both at your coffee meetups on Fridays and also at the Connect Week. And I was just thinking about what's different about this presentation. But first, before we start, cheers to everyone. I thought Mike Schaefer was going to deliver coffee this morning, but I had to make my own. But wherever you are, cheers.
Cheers.
And I look forward to talking with you and learning with you. I was thinking about how this talk is different, apart from it being virtual, of course. And what I realized is the other talks that I've given at Innovate Pasadena have been about things that I have worked on in the past. So, this is what I did in running a startup accelerator in Rome or in Hong Kong or in Los Angeles. These are the things that I learned. These are some recommendations based on that. And what I realized is in this case, I'm actually, really projecting forward a little more than I normally would. We're all in this unusual, unexpected, time, and maybe this transition type of time. So this, I think, is more of a discussion or more of some high level ideas. And you're probably thinking about how the world is changing as well. But when it comes to being resilient and also hopefully using this time as a period of growth, or at least thinking about how you're going to use it as a period of growth, I thought I would just start with some images, and I know these are images of a general type that everyone has been looking at recently, right? So we're certainly seeing images like this, Even, you know, like this, how the world is changing in response to a pandemic. And if you're like me, you probably also went back and looked in history, how did people deal with this 100 years ago? Because pandemics come and go. Doesn't top this, though, probably. But you're also probably thinking, what is the world going to be like in the future? And maybe you're wondering, you know, is this really the way that you want to go to a restaurant or this? Or like, how good would the food have to be for you to, go out in this manner? What will things be like? What are like the longer term effects? What is travel going to be like? Do I want to travel as much as I used to? When would I do it? What other economic effects, you know, would there be? You know, talking about rent strikes, right? You know, this is not something that was on the agenda even just a few months ago. But as is typical, you know, especially I'd say, you know, in the US, you know, you think of volunteerism as a way of dealing with a crisis. You know, there's a lot of people, you know, organizing locally, could be small groups, could be on a national basis, international basis, and thinking about how do we contribute either to like our locality. So here is, yeah, this was organized by some UVA students who were out of internships. They organized a food delivery for older people. You know, a lot of volunteer opportunities. This was an initiative that came out of USC. Actually, I had a company in the incubator that contributed to this. So it's, you know, it's printing, you know, using 3D printers and, you know, assembling face shields. And, you know, as well doing, contributing to the face mask, you know, shortage and sewing face masks, or even doing this at scale as one, you know, a Los Angeles company has started to do. But you definitely see, you know, headlines like this. Companies that formerly seem to be doing very well, and, you know, even in the case of Airbnb, planning an IPO, and all of a sudden things are really different. The same time, though, for coincidental reasons, I'll say, there are other companies that maybe are doing a little better and are actually able to grow. And then we also think, you know, how, you know, in a difficult time where a lot of people are suffering, you know, maybe you don't want it to be known so much that you are doing well. Or if there are government, you know, support programs, maybe you actually don't want to participate in them because you think that you should give that opportunity to someone else. So, you know, you might draw up a short list of companies or industries or types of services that might be doing okay, or maybe even better in some cases, along with the short list of companies that are doing worse. And there's clearly both, I think, in this situation. So I wanted to kind of take that as the introduction and then start thinking about what are some ways that we could think of growth, because unlike other growth-related talks that I, you know, might give in the past, I think there's some differences now. You know, even differences in the way we think, you know, what is growth? So, you know, growth takes a lot of different forms, right? And I'm going to say, especially now, we are thinking not only in, you know, terms of money or customers or business. We're thinking maybe also in terms of personal growth. You know, this is one thing I noticed that happened, I think, pretty soon, especially as people needed to, pull back and, you know, not go out and, you know, stay in their homes, you know, not commute to work, you know, instead, like, you know, work from home. So a lot of thought, I think, you know, whether you intended it or not, has been going into, like, what is the personal growth that I'm interested in? So that could be in terms of relationships, just learning. Like, I've seen a lot of people take this time to, you know, throw maybe some of the extra time that they have, either because they're not commuting or in a worse case, because maybe their jobs have been affected, and, you know, throw it into acquiring new skills, And then also, like, what are the health considerations that I want to have, both, you know, preserving health in a coronavirus situation, but also, like, what does it mean for me to be healthy? So I think people are thinking a little differently than they had been just a couple months ago about, you know, personal growth. And of course, also, like, you know, career related growth. You might be in a career in an industry that's been impacted by coronavirus and it's sudden, you know, you were not expecting this to happen. Are there some opportunities that might be out there? And as well, wherever you happen to be living, I know there's people from, you know, beyond Pasadena who have, you know, tuned in today, wherever you happen to be living, like, if you had chosen the spot that you were living purely because it was close to the work that you were doing, and now you're working remotely, and maybe you could continue to work remotely in the future, or maybe, like, local opportunities, you know, are different than the ones that you want to be involved in, or even things such as the school that you may have. You may have, like, chosen a location, actually, as I suppose I did, specifically because it was close to, you know, school for one of your kids. Maybe that's, you know, the way you're thinking about that has changed. So as a way of thinking through an approach, I actually went to a list of reasons startups fail. And there's many lists like this. This is one from a company called CB Insights. So to think through this and to think, you know, what kind of approach I might take or someone might take, I thought of, okay, if we go through the list of reasons that startups fail, and this will overlap with some of the personal growth questions from before, we think of this list of, you know, causes of failure. How do we simply avoid some of these causes of failure? So to pick some of the causes of failure from that previous chart, what are some causes and then some things that might be different now? So when it comes to, like, a cause of business failure, and this could also be personal, impact. You don't need to only think of this in a, you know, career or a business perspective, but if it's not the right team, an opportunity that I think is now presented is you might now be able to hire talent that you couldn't have hired in the past. So in a personal experience, you know, the startup that I ran grew out of the financial crisis from 2009. So about 10 years ago, we were actually able to hire people that we probably could not have afforded in a normal year. In some cases, we were actually able to acquire, you know, like, talent in the sense of like master's, you know, students in computer science, where we were able to get them to work for us because we were helping them build their portfolio of work, able to demonstrate that, like, doing really interesting, probably more fun work than if they had simply taken a job at Google. And there can be some opportunities for acquiring talent. And I see this in, like, the startups that I work with, in the incubator at USC. I see this, you know, just in other people I'm talking to. There might be some ways that you can, you know, just think differently about providing a great experience to a potential partner or employee, and you might not have had access to them in a different time. Similarly with, like, pricing or cost related issues, you know, this is the time when you might be able to renegotiate pricing with suppliers, vendors. Better than shutting down would be that you renegotiate some of those terms or payment terms or what the price is overall. On the marketing side, the interesting thing that's happened is where people were doing paid marketing in the past, and in some cases, it was not a great way of doing customer acquisition, that's changed a little bit. So the market for, say, paid ads, you know, online has fallen quite a bit. So in some ways, you know, doing paid growth might be cheaper today than it was just a couple months ago. Fewer people are buying paid ads. It actually might make more sense for you to do that. A timing mismatch is something that you would deal with in any market, but there's a sudden mismatch, you know, that happens now. It's one that, you know, was not being discussed even just, you know, say, you know, 3-5 months ago. Can you use timing to your advantage? And then to the point on running out of cash from that, you know, the short list of, you know, startup failure causes, you might instead be thinking of, you know, just preserving cash just so you can survive long enough to win. A lot of success is just being able to stick around long enough and being able to then take advantage when the environment improves. So like a more, like a broader, more general list is you might think about controlling the amount of information that you are consuming. So if you're constantly watching the news, you might think, is the information that I'm consuming really helpful to me? Or is it a distraction? Or is there just so much noise? And I hear just different reports all the time. I might want to filter that out and try not to consume a lot. I personally find that to be really helpful. Just really control how much information that you are, you know, bringing in, and think a little longer term. You know, what care do you need to do, both for your team, if this is a business growth consideration, or just individually, taking care of your individual health, taking care of your team's wellness? Are they worried about, you know, the way the business is going? Are they worried about their prospects for continuing to be employed longer term? I found a lot of value. In fact, in the incubator that I run at USC, we've started doing a weekly wellness check-in, just making sure that everyone is, you know, kind of taking care of these, you know, like I'll say like general wellness or, you know, health related or your care related considerations. I've been surprised at, you know, the value in doing that. Are you thinking about purely survival, or is there an opportunity to change direction instead, or to grow in a different way instead? Extending your relevant network is one I actually recommend to everyone, both like portfolio companies, you know, students. This is a time, I think, you know, many of you, I have certainly experienced this. This is a time when I'd say people are a little more open to just being contacted out of the blue by someone they might not know. I've certainly gotten a number of one-off kind of requests to talk or to, you know, kind of share what I do and hear what somebody else does. I have actually had a lot of, I've seen, you know, companies and, you know, individual students have a lot of success where they do outreach, like cold outreach on LinkedIn. You know, there's thought to it. They are identifying, say, an alum from their school. They're identifying somebody in the industry that they want to work in. They might just be identifying somebody who they, you know, want to emulate, you know, in the future. And in general, I found people are pretty open to taking a 15-minute call. This is a kind of network building that I'd say, like, at a minimum, you end up learning from the other people that you connect with. Maybe longer term, some opportunities emerge out of it. You know, this is something I recommend to, you know, to everyone. And, you know, there's also, of course, like a larger discussion, I'd say a national discussion on what capabilities, say, were there locally or domestically that have shifted away. You know, there are industries that maybe were growing in the past, they have declined for a number of reasons. Where do we actually want to invest in local capabilities, whether that's manufacturing, other types of production, farming? You know, I think there's a lot of opportunities just in thinking about what are some of the longer term trends, you know, for that. What are some of the things that are going to change? And then finally, you know, are things going to be different forever? Or is this just going to last for a while? You know, forever is just another way of saying a while and a while and a while and a while, like a long while. So I almost think that we might be overemphasizing some of the like the short-term shocks that people have experienced, both in like work from home, on the healthcare side, things like that. Some things I think will remain changed for a long time, but you know, there's, I think you can take some thought on what might change for good, what might go back when you do think through, okay, where do you want to invest your time? So I've left this pretty high level, you know, today. I kind of expect, in fact, I'm going to stop sharing my screen now, kind of expect that this is more of a discussion, whether it's today or just longer term. But happy to talk, you know, with any of you here about, you know, what you're going through, some of the ideas, you know, that you're thinking about. You know, I'm happy to like open it up for discussion. Thank you.
Excellent. Thank you, Paul. Well, everyone, please go ahead and put your questions in the Q&A panel. You can find the Q&A panel down on the bottom. Don't put them in the chat because we're not moderating the chat. Our first question is, in the new economy or new reality, what role do you see for automation and for a change in the fourth or labor multipliers that are available but have not been economically feasible before?
Well, I'm not smart enough to answer questions like this. So I guess like one of the things I think about in your question, so role for automation. So is this automation coming about because of like a social distancing, like a healthcare kind of a consideration? In other words, if we had the experience of certain manufacturing processes being difficult because you could not get enough people into the factory, either because people were sick or because the normal layout of a factory needed people to be a little closer than you could, you know, safely have in this time. So it's interesting to think, you know, is some of the automation benefit that you won't need people to be, you know, coming in, or at least in a, you know, a close working environment, or is it more robust because if there is a shock to the labor force and people are sick and they cannot work, you could continue to go. The, you know, there's certainly risks with automation as well. So if it's more top down, and this is where, I don't know, in the past I've actually been kind of bearish on automation in, you know, it's a slightly different question than you're asking, but like automation in the sense of autonomous vehicle, you know, automation. If that type of automation also introduces other risks, like systemic risks, in other words, you can knock out a fleet of autonomous vehicles with a bug, with a hack, you know, if that introduces other risks, I wonder, you know, are we just shifting where the risk is? Automation, though, might be a way of bringing some manufacturing back, you know, locally or domestically. I think, you know, that manufacturing shift that's, you know, been going on for decades, whether it is, you know, consumer products, pharma, I think that's going to be, you know, reconsidered, you know, a lot now. So I'm not completely, you know, answering your question. I also just think this is a, like you're asking a really big question.
No worries. That was great. Do you have any recommendations on virtual management for managers around accountability, productivity, responsibility, et cetera, of other team members?
Yeah, absolutely. So some things to share that I've seen work well with some of the companies that I, you know, that I have, say, in the incubator or elsewhere. Because, you know, the default now, or at least for a while, is you are remote, you know, first. You can do an easy kind of check-in at the beginning of the day and at the end of the day. So about a week ago, I was talking to a founder who I know, and they had previously been working all in the same office, and obviously now they're working all remotely. But something that they do to keep everyone on track and also just to keep the communication flowing is they start the morning with a 15-minute stand-up meeting. In other words, you know, kind of like a scrum meeting where everyone talks about what they're going to work on today, any challenges, anything they need help with. And then at the end of the day, always at the same time in the morning, always at the same time in the end, they get together again. And it's another quick 15-minute Zoom call. Everyone goes through, it's a minute each person, and you go through. So it very quickly helps you see, okay, are we staying on track? Was there something that we thought was going to not be a problem, and it ended up being a lot more difficult than we expected? Some of the work from home, I think, can help enforce a little bit of discipline that you didn't need before. I am someone who, like in the role that I have had at USC, I have basically had my office door open and people would just like come in and out when they needed something, which was fine. It was very casual. You know, I would coincidentally, end up talking to people a lot that way. It was also a little haphazard. So it was good in that, you know, some kind of creative things can happen, but it was also a little haphazard. And maybe there's also value just to be taken from saying, okay, if I'm working with you in this business or on this team or on this project, you know, every day, maybe it doesn't need to be every day, maybe it's every week, we're always going to, you know, have this, you know, this stand-up meeting where we all go through and we say, okay, this is what we're working on. This is where we need some help. This is what we're doing next week. And it enforces accountability. It keeps the communication going. I think you can also do it in a way that it's just natural. It's fun. So that's a recommendation that you might think about.
That's great. During the after coronavirus period, what local capabilities do you see needing to ramp up or be built?
I'm probably not alone in this, but I think there's going to be a lot of rethinking or just evaluation of, there are a lot of like just natural domestic strengths that say, if you're talking, you know, domestically or locally, there's a lot of natural strengths that are in just, you know, the land of the US, say. So historically, that's been agriculture, right? You have a huge place that you can do, like, you know, massive farms in the Midwest. The weather is generally good. Transportation system is really good, whether it's roads, you know, river, it's easy to ship things. And in the past, you know, that kind of extended to the manufacturing side, whether that was automotive manufacturing, other types of, you know, equipment, consumer products, pharmaceuticals, other type of, you know, healthcare products. So I think, you know, there's going to be a rethink, or maybe even a, people are going to say there's more of an opportunity, or maybe there's a risk if we do not have some domestic or local capabilities to produce the things that people just need to live. So we've already done that. I think, you know, like the US is a huge exporter of agricultural, you know, products, but, you know, maybe there's going to be a resurgence again with other consumer products, other manufacturing, other healthcare products. It was obviously a huge problem when people needed masks or face shields or other PPE, and it was impossible to produce enough in a short enough time, you know, for the needs. There's a lot of, I think, emerging, you know, case studies about, you know, that exact fact, and some of the benefits of having global manufacturing, but also in a time of crisis, do you need some level of, you know, domestic capabilities that you can at least, you know, repurpose, you know, a certain number of factories or, you know, like talent to be able to produce more of a certain item. It's probably a mistake to think that if there is another pandemic in however many years, you know, that is exactly the same as this one. But there might be a short list of some of the, you know, PPE, you know, some of the, you know, some of the materials, or just some of the capability that might be flexible enough to reposition, you know, in the short term. So I think people are going to be thinking about that, or like building towards that. There's some opportunities there.
Yeah. Yeah. any exercises or strategies that you lead your startups through to take advantage of and kind of adapt to the changing parameters in the time of COVID-19 and also post-COVID-19?
A common, say, tactic, I'd say, is, so in a startup, you know, how is a startup different from an established business? It's different in the sense that you're still searching for a business model, right? You're not exactly sure who your target customer is. You're not exactly sure the way that you are making money or your cost structure, the value that you're providing. Those things are still kind of emerging. So in terms of, strategies that they could, take, I think you should be going back to your business model and really thinking through, what is the value that we are delivering now, whether it's like short-term COVID-19, next year, 2 year kind of framework, or longer term. That simple exercise of just going through the elements of your business model. And if you are a startup, you're probably doing that on you might be doing that on a more regular basis. Early stage, if it's some of the like really early stage companies that I might be talking to, they might be doing that every single week. The ones that get a little further along, they have maybe revenue that's approaching sustainability, or they've raised a little money and they're able to invest a little bit in their own growth. They might be doing that, every month, say. But I think you need to just keep coming back to like, what is the value you are delivering? How are you capturing that value? What are the costs, the costs of you providing that value? Some things have changed, probably for you in the last few months. And if you are a startup, the coincidental benefit that some startups I've seen have had in this time has been, and actually in some cases, it hasn't changed as much for them as you would expect. One reason is, they already weren't paying themselves anything on the team, and they're still not going to be paying themselves on the team. They did not expect to raise money in the past because they thought they were too early stage, or they had maybe more of a bootstrapping path, and they've actually continued, in that path. So to some degree, if you have that, like that greater flexibility, or the team was just lean, you actually might find that you have a little more resilience there built in, but you are probably still thinking, okay, what are the changes in the environment that lead me to thinking differently about my business model? So that's something that we certainly work on, in the incubator and in classes.
Great. Are there any training programs that you're aware of to teach or train managers to manage virtually, or any books that you might be aware of for managing virtually as well?
This is a great question. I can't make any real recommendations. I've seen a lot of things that are out there. But no, unfortunately, I don't have a short list that I can point you to immediately. I certainly know that people are working on this type of, this type of content. Something that is, again, it's not exactly the question that you were asking, but through USC and, over the last month, I've been organizing a small business roundtable series. So coming out of, impact from COVID-19, the university was asking a lot of faculty, how can you contribute back to our greater community? And then one of the things that I proposed and then ended up, is now being done is a small business roundtable series. So it's very informal. It's basically pairing a little more experienced business person. So somebody who's been through other downturns, somebody who maybe has had to, lay off staff or shut down locations, people who have been through like dips, pairing them with other business, could be owners, could be managers who are going through something, difficult. Not necessarily, the same industry, but like there's some commonality in dealing with a crisis. So we're now just starting that process of like matching people up. And it's a really informal process where you'll get on a Zoom call or a phone call every week kind of a round table. Hey, this is what I'm going through. You know, how have you dealt with this? Or what are some resources that we might be looking at? Or what are some ideas that we might be considering as we go forward? I've actually found there's a lot of value just in that discussion with somebody who's been through, you know, a crisis type of situation in the past, and thinking through, okay, how are things different? That's a new type of program. You might have seen me share some things on that, you know, on LinkedIn in the past, but yeah, happy to do so, you know, again, if it's of value.
Great, great. Can you talk to us a little bit about your book, you know, Starved Sacrilege for the Underdog Entrepreneur? Can you tell us a little bit about your book and the intent behind it?
Sure. So this feels like a very long time ago. I wrote this in 2014 when I had first moved to Pasadena. And it grew out of my experience running a startup accelerator in Hong Kong. And then in that process, getting to know and, you know, visit a lot of other smaller startup hubs, you know, smaller locations. And so I interviewed, you know, 30 or so people in writing that book. And I looked at how you might approach your own business growth in a different way if you are based out of a smaller tech hub or not in a tech hub. You know, I felt like a lot of the attention was to like the Silicon Valley model, which certainly is like, you know, in general, it's, you know, themed around being able to grow quickly, being able to raise money to support that growth, building businesses that can be like, you know, national, you know, international in nature relatively quickly. That's not the type of thing that works in a lot of parts of the world. Or you might say, I want to instead build for some of the local regional problems that I see. And I don't need to take this path to quick growth. I don't need to raise money. Maybe there is no capability for me to raise money, you know, locally anyway, or in this certain environment, you know, anyway. So, you know, a lot of those considerations in the book, and you can, you know, now you can see it on my website, is, you know, just based around how do you figure out, you know, what are the problems that you should be building for if you're not in a tech hub or in a you know, economic environment of growth, what are some other tactics that you might take that still help you build a business that is sustainable? Because I think like there's a lot of, you know, we can learn a lot from the way people operate in different parts of the world. We sometimes maybe give a little too much attention to the like the tech hub way of doing things. But there are a lot of other opportunities around the world. And sometimes those startups that are, you know, thinking a little more, I don't know, locally or regionally, or maybe thinking in terms of bootstrapping first rather than raising capital first, in a time like this, they actually might be a little more sustainable because they have kept themselves lean. They have tried to get to revenue, you know, as a way of, you know, supporting themselves, at least to a certain stage. Afterwards, they might consider raising capital, but it's not, you know, like their go-to approach of building a business. So yeah, if you are interested, you know, please take a read through of that book. Just remember, I wrote it in 2014.
Okay, great. You made a great suggestion about expanding your network during self-isolation. You mentioned LinkedIn. Do you have other ideas you suggest? Meetup, Eventbrite, organizing your own online Zoom meeting?
Yeah, I mean, those are all great. And certainly also like events like this are great. So when we used to do this coffee meetup or Connect Week, you know, it was always in person. And when I would go, I would, you know, always, you know, just kind of bump into a handful of people who I had not met before, as well as, you know, old friends. So you can do, I think, a bit of that online. So LinkedIn is a great just kind of mass source for being able to search for people, say with a certain skill set or background that is a fit for, you know, what you're looking for. Alumni networks is another way you might, you know, think through this. You know, there are, you know, a number of, you know, meetup groups or Facebook groups or other groups where it's either focused on alumni or like a community of interest. And also, to be honest, I've found, like in my case, I've found, writing is a way of people inbound kind of reaching out to me. So when I write, blog posts, or if I send emails out with, what I've been writing, the people who subscribe to that, they will I've ended up virtually now meeting, I don't know, 6 or 7 people, I think, in just in the last few weeks who, I never met them in person before. They identified with something that I wrote about or, something I was doing. And we had this discussion, and I don't know if, longer term something comes from that, but we're at least, starting that, discussion that might lead to something in the future. But I would say just be creative about your approach. You probably, through your own extended network, at any given time can get to another handful of people who, you didn't know them before, but your friend or your friend's friend knows somebody who you might want to speak to, where there might be some mutual benefit.
Great. Yeah, I've had a number of students from USC reach out, other people. It's been a great time for sure. Has cybersecurity been an issue or concern when it comes to discussing confidential business matters and information with team members, clients, customers virtually that you found?
So I was Zoom bombed in my first online class at USC, but it was actually, I kind of expected that something like that was going to happen, and I very quickly was able to eject the person from the class. So that's certain. And then since that time, USC, at least for classes, they've really locked down the security, quite a bit. So I personally have probably only really dealt with it in that sense. But yeah, certainly if you think, now it's normal for video to be going, kids' classes being run by Zoom, certainly something to be thinking about. I don't have a great answer for you other than the common things to do of not having your online meetings being totally open to the world, not spreading a link around, using in Zoom, using the waiting room, feature so that you as a host can admit people. Zoom was an example of a company that, the product was, I'd say, better than a lot of the other video solutions out there, but it also was one that had less in the way of security, and it allowed it to grow quickly, as we've seen, in the last few months. You don't need to have an account. You can just take the, take the link and join, right? So it's allowed it to grow really quickly, but the users have also, suffered, from that at times. This is what happens with quick growth.
Catch 22 there.
Yes.
Thank you for sharing your insights, but venture capital is one way to fuel growth. Have you seen a change in the VC during COVID? And how do you see it changing post COVID for VC?
Still early days of evaluating this, I would say. So, some people have talked about valuations dropping. I would say the good thing about the investment community, certainly locally, I'd say, is that it's a little, self-policed. So, a lot of things that I've seen have been, pre-coronavirus, you had a term sheet or you were negotiating, potential investment, and all of a sudden now the terms are changing because, the environment, has changed. People, I think, are sharing that experience. So if there is, or what I should say is if there is a behavior that might be deemed predatory or a little taking advantage of founders, I've actually seen people share that, that behavior. So it kind of helps self-police the, the potential investor, there. But valuations, I think, have fallen. You wouldn't necessarily want to have raised at like a evaluation, like a previous valuation that maybe is not, you know, supportable, you know, afterwards. But I think it's making people think more strongly about the capability of bootstrapping startups, but also where there are some companies that are actually able to grow more quickly now. It might be for coincidental reasons. So for example, if they were doing, you know, delivery, certain types of logistics, you know, healthcare, you know, screenings, the, you know, there are certain, you know, like online entertainment or gaming, you know, there are there's certain business types that have been able to benefit in this time of crisis. And it was really coincidental. It wasn't like they planned, you know, for there to be a pandemic so they could take advantage of this. They just happened to be well positioned. But yeah, if, like I've seen in just in the incubator that I run, I've seen a number of companies that are healthcare related or health tech related that have actually been doing well or maybe better than they would have. I've also seen some food companies that I have, you know, that have benefited. And, you know, as they have said to me, well, people are eating at home more. So they're getting, you know, they're getting deliveries of our products. They, you know, are going out to eat, you know, less often. So actually we have this path to a customer that didn't exist as strongly in the past. You know, things are a little better for them. But it hits everyone a little differently, you know, even within an industry, it hits people a little differently.
All right. Those are all our questions. Is there anything else that the questions have brought up or something you'd like to say, you know, that you didn't get to say in your presentation that you'd like to share with us?
Well, kind of like, you said in the beginning, I think, and on behalf of, your group, you know, Invade Pasadena, I'm here. So feel free to reach out to me. You know, on Twitter is probably like the easiest place or on LinkedIn. I write a little bit about, you know, related issues. So, I write a blog on unintended consequences, or if you just search unintended consequences blog, you will see some of the writing, you know, that I've, you know, posted online. Because, I don't know, I've found, you know, that writing to be kind of an outlet for me and maybe helping me think through some of these questions, you know, a little more deeply. But I am happy to, you know, email or take a call where I can with people, especially people who are, you know, in Pasadena or who have some kind of overlapping interest, or if I can help in some way. As well, if you are looking to hire, you know, I have a list of students whose internships have been, you know, disrupted in this time. So I'm happy to make introductions there where it's of value, you know, to people. Or on the flip side, you know, I also, you know, here and there know of companies that are looking to hire. So it's a little haphazard, a little conversational, but I'm happy to either share anything that could be of value or to try to make connections where that could be of value.
The Friday Coffee Meetup podcast is brought to you by Echo Factory. Learn more about how Echo Factory can help your business achieve rapid sustainable growth at echo-factory.com and get all the details about upcoming Friday Coffee Meetup episodes at fridaycoffeemeetup.com. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you again next week.